Welcome into the Locked On Knicks podcast. Gavin Shaw, Alex Wolf, and we are back with more mailbag. You guys demanded it. We're delivering. Alex, where are we starting?
Yeah, we got a lot of great questions. Some that came in, what people thought was past the horn, but not so fast. We're still going to answer them. We're going to talk about a hypothetical about some prime point guards and which one would be the best and the most fun on the Knicks. Super fun question there. Talk about a couple trades and what we think of them, one to move up in the draft, another one to get off some veterans. And then we'll talk about some of our favorite, or at least guys that we know of internationally in the draft, maybe even some that we haven't fully dove into yet. But we'll talk about some international draft prospects to close the show next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I think we see Willis coming out. There he comes. Right now.
Starts without a five. Ewing for the win. Yes.
Up, up left. Now fires it.
He's good. And he's fouled. He's cut. And he makes it.
Anthony for three.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, and we wanted to thank you for making Locked On Knicks your first listen today and every day. We are now available on all platforms, including on YouTube. You should know that at this point, but if you don't, if you're new, we welcome you to check us out. Throw us a subscription, throw us a comment, throw us a like. We really appreciate it. I am Gavin Shaw, a play-by-play broadcaster finishing off my spring season with the New York State Lacrosse Championships over the weekend. And he is Alex Wolf, much more relevant to your concerns, the editor-in-chief of The Strickland, the greatest Knicks website out there. You can check them out on social media at thestrick.land. And we got, thanks to some fantastic fans of The Strickland and some fantastic fans of Locked On Knicks, some final questions for you guys to go through. The first one comes from, with apologies to our guy Jordan Bubb, the greatest question asker of all time, Ignacio at Ignacio Lobregat. He maybe not crazy volume, but he hits us with quality every single time. And he says, I know this is late. It's not late, but thought of this just for fun. Prime Marbury, prime Baron Davis, prime Kemba, prime D Rose. Who would have been the most successful one on the current team? And who would be the most entertaining to watch with the current team? Alex, I will throw that your way.
Yeah, I saw this question. I immediately started thinking about it. And I think it's pretty hard to argue against prime Derrick Rose as being the best out of them. I mean, he's the only MVP out of them. He, at his peak, was the best of all of them, without a doubt. And the Knicks also, I mean, we talk about this all the time. This is why someone like Jaden Ivey is so appealing. You know, they need more athleticism, more burst. Like, even like 30-something-year-old Derrick Rose on the team currently still has some of the most burst on the whole team. You know, they need more of that quick twitch, you know, blow-by athleticism. And prime Derrick Rose had all that. Of course, the calculus gets a little different there. If it's like, okay, you could pick up Derrick Rose like for his MVP year, but then you're on the hook for everything that comes after that. Obviously, then the calculus changes quite a bit. All of these guys, though, honestly, had some injury and or, in the case of Marbury, like personal issues that sort of derailed their careers too early, one might argue. I don't know. I mean, I guess if it came down to it then and it was like, you know, injury history counts too, I think my answer would be the same in both respects, which for best and most fun, I think it'd be prime Baron Davis. But I was a huge Baron Davis guy, but same deal, like huge athleticism. Like he had so much pop, like in his early Charlotte days. And then he aged pretty gracefully into, you know, the version that was with the Warriors then that had the big upset over the Mavs and everything. Like I think he would be the guy for me if, you know, if all the baggage comes with them. I think Baron Davis is probably the guy I would end up going with. Just because I loved his game. I liked how it evolved over time. I always thought he was really electric. Great assist man, but also a really dynamic scorer too in his own respect. So I think Baron Davis would be my guy if the injury baggage comes with. But like in a vacuum, I think it's prime Derrick Rose without a doubt.
Am I crazy or didn't Baron Davis blow out his knee on the Knicks?
He did.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, that was so late in his career.
Like, yeah, no, I know. I'm just saying the irony of like betting on him to be the healthy guy.
I mean, the funny part is that all these guys did play for the Knicks, which is probably why Ignacio asked this question. But
right. Yeah, no.
The Knicks got most of them well past their prime.
Yeah, it's a great point. We're totally in sync on this one. Derrick Rose, just flat out best player on this list, gives the Knicks the juice that they're missing. And I think he would make everyone else on the roster, Julius Randle aside, because I don't think anyone can do that, but he would make everyone else on this roster make sense with just his ability to just torpedo a defense. And you think of who he was playing with, like he had some half decent shooting around him with Luol Deng. And I mean, that's who, I guess they had Rip Hamilton for a little bit on those teams, but you give that version of D Rose modern spacing, like as incredible as Ja is, Rose was that, but with more bulk too. And just crazy of a layup package. So I just think he would go off in the modern NBA. But Baron Davis would be my pick for most fun, because like you, just aesthetically, probably one of my 3 to 5 favorite players ever, just someone who could shoot like that, who could really pass the basketball, who, I mean, you were talking about his ups in Charlotte. He had that dunk over Kirilenko with Golden State, where he was still just a freak of nature. And I also think there's an argument for him in terms of fit, because the one thing with Rose is obviously he just really could not shoot the basketball in his career. And I think the Knicks still need that with RJ Barrett being one of their primaries. And I think Davis would give you maybe that perfect balance between passing and scoring. Obviously Kemba offensively would be a super clean fit, but you just worry about him on the defensive end of the floor. And similar with Marbury. Marbury's, again, at his best, I think, outside of Rose, like just as good on offense as the other three guys on this list. And it was a sick shooter too, but was a little bit too score first. I know all these guys lean that way, but Marbury was a fantastic passer, but just the way he dominated the ball, I don't know if that would work incredibly well with RJ. But if I'm forgetting something about Stephon Marbury, please, someone throw us a comment. All these guys would be a whole lot of fun on the current Knicks, but Rose and Baron Davis is exactly where my mind went as well.
Yeah, I'll give Marbury his flowers too. I mean, he was really fun in his own respect. Like, I actually think that he and Baron Davis had some similarities to their game in that they were like score first point guards that clearly had the passing chops. But like, I think the differentiator is that nuclear athleticism for Baron Davis, which at least in my memory, and maybe it's a little clouded by the Knicks version of Marbury that was like right in his prime sort of when he arrived with the team, but then very quickly descended from that. But I don't remember Marbury ever really having.
No, he was in college. He was a sick athlete. And I think on not that I've watched a ton of him on the T-Wolves, but I believe on the T-Wolves, he could dunk on people, but he wasn't quite Davis.
I guess it depends on what you call his prime too. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And also Barron's prime. I mean, that maybe that changes it too, I guess. Like maybe with modern medicine, Derrick Rose is better off. So like you take him even with the ACL tear impending at like age 22, because ACLs are handled so much better now.
The issue is he still has Tibbs driving him into the ground.
He does. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, maybe if you can add him to this team and old Derrick Rose can tell him, you know, tell all the tricks, the young Derrick Rose, then maybe this is like a different thing. You know, maybe
he's doing a fascia stretching or whatever it is, fascia, whatever the term was. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you're like plantar fascia and all that stuff. There's like a whole thing to it. Like it's like very therapeutic apparently. But yeah, I mean, because that's the other thing, you know, if you consider Baron Davis's prime, like the Golden State years, which I think it's probably debatable. I mean, that might be the most complete version of him, even if the Hornets version was like the most explosive and most fun. Maybe you could say the same thing about Marbury with like the Timberwolves years were the most explosive, but like either the Nets or the Knicks years were like or the Phoenix years. I don't know, like one of those maybe is the most complete version of him. Then maybe it's like, okay, well, you get less prime with the other guys, whereas Derrick Rose like peaked at 22. So like then if in this hypothetical, you can get modern medicine involved. I don't know. This is why I always love these hypotheticals, because it's like so weird to think about like how much. I mean, I think about too, like totally off topic, and we should probably like move to our next question soon. But I always think about like Amari Stoudemire too. He got this total junk science procedure on his knee, along with a lot of guys got that same procedure, that microfracture surgery, which like, if you look it up, it was essentially like, it was like, they were like drilling holes in your like cartilage of your knee to like make it more aerodynamic or something. Like, I don't know what the thought was there, but like I look at that and I'm just like, man, if Amari hadn't, you know, gotten duped along with a ton of other athletes into this like junk science procedure, like how much longer could his career have been with like today's medicine? Or, you know, how much later would his body have failed him? You know what I mean? So, cause his knees were always going to be bulky, but like, I think he probably took like at least 4 or 5 years off his career between the time he was injured in Phoenix and then like with the Knicks, where obviously his body just totally failed him right around like his late 20s. Like, I don't know. It's just, it's all very interesting to think about, but yeah, I think final answer in a vacuum, Derrick Rose. I'm still taking Baron Davis anyway, cause Baron Davis is just so fun. He would be the most fun option, I think.
Well, Alex, there's a lot of junk science out there behind repairing human beings, but there's some hard science on how to repair your car. I hope Rock Auto pays me a little extra for that. That was good. This episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing the only brand that their warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pockets. You can save time and money when using Rock Auto. Why choose to spend 30%, 50%, even 100% more for the same parts from a chain store or car dealership? They have everything you could need, from brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. And Rock Auto prices are reliably low for every customer. You can go explore their easy to use website today to find solutions to your auto part needs. All you have to do is go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck, and write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. And with that, Alex, we are back, and let's get right into our second question. It comes from the venerable Jared Talbot at Jared Talbot 5 on Twitter, and he wants to know, do you see a possible trade up, including Indiana and Sacramento, to get the New York Knicks up to 4? Something where Randall goes to Indiana, Brogdon goes to Sacramento, Barnes to the New York Knicks for salary, plus picks and young players from New York Knicks to make it work, ideally keeping Obi to play the 4. This is a pretty interesting scenario, Alex, because we've talked about a straight-up trade with the Pacers, a straight-up trade with the Kings. Neither of us were imaginative enough to come up with a trade that involved all three teams.
Yeah, it is interesting. Like, so when I'm looking at just framework, like salary-wise, I think this would work pretty much like a glove. Like, all those guys make close enough to one another. Maybe Indy would have to include one other player, like just the salary filler, but pretty damn close as far as salaries go. So then you're just talking about like what young players are getting moved. And really it's like, how much more does Sacramento have to get paid here? I feel like, because Barnes is still a functional player, you know, like he's still got, I mean, we were literally talking about around the trade deadline and this was like peak low Julius Randle value, but we were just like, would you trade Julius for Barnes straight up? Like, you know, at least Barnes
would.
Yeah, I mean, at least Barnes, like, you know, he might not be as talented, but he's less likely to hijack things. So, you know, he's still a solid player. Like, and Brogdon obviously has his injury issues, which we've talked about in some of the various, you know, trade for Brogdon shows that we've done. So like, it's pretty intriguing, but Sacramento is definitely the one that needs like the compensation here. Now it's like, does the Dallas pick next year and a fistful of seconds get it done? Maybe with like, I don't know, Deuce McBride involved. Do you have to move up to like Quentin Grimes and include him? Is it still worth it then? I guess it depends on like what's the team's evaluation of Ivy, right? Is Ivy a star? Is Ivy not a star? Or whoever ends up there, maybe Houston shocks everybody and takes Ivy to create a super weird redundant pairing with Jalen Green. Who knows? But like, you know, I don't know for sure. In theory, I like it. It would come down to what that cost is of picks and young players. But like, if you could do that deal and include like the Dallas pick next year, and maybe like, I think the Knicks have the Detroit pick next year, the Detroit second rounder, which should be a pretty valuable second rounder, include like that. And then maybe one or two other second rounders from that year and future years. I mean, that's palatable to me, I think. I think I'd be down for that. Now, the other thing to consider, too, is I guess if Indy really likes Randall, then maybe it's just like you sort of play musical chairs with 11, 6, and 4, and 11 goes to Indy with Randall, 6 goes to Sacramento, so they're only moving back 2 spots, and then Barnes and 4 go to the Knicks, and then you're probably paying Indy. And in that case, I feel like, given the fact that Randall would be the best player in a vacuum in the deal, you might be able to get away with just the Dallas pick in a couple seconds. So, like, I don't hate this. I kind of like it. It kind of makes a lot of sense. And it's, like, low risk for the Kings, I feel like. You know, they might need a little bit of extra compensation to make it work because, like, Barnes for Brogdon, I think, slightly doesn't favor them. But I like it. I think it's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, my instinct on this is for the Knicks to get up to four, it's going to take essentially three first-round picks plus a player. And that first-round pick might be in the form of someone like Quentin Grimes or Obi Toppin, who were recent first-round picks who still, I would say, hold similar value, especially with Obi's flourish to end the season. But yeah, the scenario you described where Indiana pops back to 11, that's how I was imagining this working. So maybe it's something along the lines of Indiana picks up Randall and a top five protected Knicks 2023 first round pick for dropping down. Sacramento gets the Dallas pick, the Detroit pick, and then maybe someone like Deuce from the Knicks for going from 4 to 6, and the Knicks just and maybe something small from Indiana, and then the Knicks get to hop up from 11 to 4 to get Jaden Ivey. And if that's the deal, I would do it, because for the Knicks, it's I think at a certain point when we talk about these trades and we talk about, well, you don't want to move out of 2023, right? Because that is the draft. And that is the draft where you're going to get like a real game changer versus this draft where I guess Jaden Ivey is kind of interesting. If you think Jaden Ivey is a star, you got to go make that swing. And there is a certain time pressure, right? Not only for the front offices with their jobs, but that's an extra year you have to wait for guys to get acclimated to playing with an RJ Barrett, an Emmanuel Quickley, a Jericho Sims, a Quentin Grimes. That it's just another year that everything gets pushed back. There is more value to having the guy now than later. And I think a lot of times NBA teams think the opposite way, where they want the future asset and they want to push it down the road. And that's partially self-preservation for a GM. So they can say, hey, you can't fire me yet. I still have these 12 picks coming. And it's also partially that, well, once a player is a player, it could go wrong. A first round pick is always good, right? So there's all these different things going on. But in terms of actual franchise building, I think there should be some time pressure. There should be some insistence on expediency. So I know that's not going over the details of the trade specifically, but it's more advocating that even if the deal does end up being three first round picks plus one of the Knicks' valuable young guys, if you're that in on Ivy and you think he's basically the next Ja Morant, even though I know there's some real differences between the two, I think you kind of got to make that swing.
Yeah, I agree about making sure to make the swing. I would not in a million years include the 2023 pick in any way, shape, or form, even if you could lotto protect it. Like, I don't know. I'm just looking up, like, as you were talking there, I went and looked just so I'm like, am I crazy? But like, I looked at next year's like projected draft, and like already at this stage, and like, I'll fully admit, I haven't even done my full research on this draft yet. And like, there are already names on next year's draft that I've been hearing about for like a number of years. Like,
yeah, but those guys are going in the lottery, right? They're not going.
But. Yeah, but it's like 10 deep, yeah. If not more. You know what I mean? Like, I really struggle to include a pick next year for anything this year, unless it's that Dallas pick, which, like, fine. Like, that's top 10 protected. I don't see that finishing any higher than 20th pick or something. And that's if Dallas doesn't take a step forward and Luka doesn't get better and whatever. Like, I would not include the Knicks' own pick. You know, go a year further in the future or 2 years further in the future. Like, push it down the line a little bit so you can finish building this core and let it coalesce and figure out if it works or not. You know what I mean? Around Ivy, around that pick next year, around RJ Barrett, Emmanuel Quickley, all that stuff. That said, I also feel like because of the inclusion of Randall in this deal, I don't know that they would necessarily have to give up three firsts or equivalent value, because I think, you know, the idea here is that Indy would look at Randall and say, hey, we're realistic. You know, we know that, you know, a star player or a player of Randall's caliber is not just going to like outright sign here. So we have confidence in our drafting, whatever, you know, we get some extra assets to make this worth it for us. And we take that flyer on Julius Randall, insert him into our like culture and whatever, give him Rick Carlisle, who's like a good coach and has done really good things with players of various renown, but definitely has done well with like well by star players and stuff. And, you know, let's just see how it works. So I think you could get away with it for a little less than that, given the fact that, like, even for all his faults, I think Randall is definitely the best player going out in this deal. Especially with the least amount of red flags, like Brogdon with all the health issues and everything. So that's basically where I'm at. But I think it's valid though, to say that it might cost a little more than what I said, but I think there would probably be some sort of middle ground where maybe it's like, okay, you could choose between like one of the Knicks' really promising young players or like a protected like 2024 pick or something like that. But I feel like they would leave 2023 off the table just for the overall depth and quality of that draft.
Yeah, I think with appropriate protections, you can trade the 2023 pick, but I hear what you're saying.
Top 29 protected, I think, is fair.
Perfect. And then we're going to start panicking when the Knicks are on track to win the title next year.
They're going to lose the pick. Yeah.
Oh, God, come on. just cheering against them in game seven with all. The last thing I'll say on this, it is with Julius Randle, it's just, that's like obviously the whole point of these fake trades is they're probably not going to happen. It's just kind of fun to talk about. We're in the heart of the offseason. Like, what else are we going to talk about? But it's just going to take the right team, right? Because I'm sure, I mean, to the point of the John Hollingers in the world, like for 20 teams in the NBA, Randle might just be blacklisted. Like we've talked a lot about just all the extracurricular stuff with him. And there might be teams that are like, you know what? That's just like, it's not worth it for us. Like I don't want to risk the downside of bringing someone like that in, because as we said, for the Knicks, there is a world where he's a net negative. So you just got to find the team that says, you know what, we're going to bank on the talent. We're going to bank on the human being who we saw during that 2021 season. And even if he's not quite up to those levels, like he can still be a really helpful player. And I'm sure there are teams that think that way, but I'm sure there's a bunch of teams around the league that just say, nah, we don't see that guy as a positive. We don't want that guy on our team. And it's just impossible to say. If in Indiana or Sacramento, which side of that equation they're on.
Yeah. Well, Gavin, I tell you what, there might be one more thing that the Knicks can throw in as a sweetener in any given deal like this. And that would be a case of Built Bars. Leon, call me up if you need some. I'll hook it up. I will take care of that. And today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. And I got to ask a question to all of you listening right now. Don't you love a chewy chocolate brownie? What about a caramel brownie with caramel swirled on top? They're so good. Now, what if I told you that you can have all that chewy, chocolatey deliciousness plus 17 grams of protein? You're in luck because caramel brownie bars are available at built.com right now. And you got to act fast because they are a fan favorite. I can say personally, I love me some caramel brownie Built Bars. I didn't have that flavor, full disclosure, but I did just have a Built Bar when I got home from the gym a couple minutes ago. And honestly, forget about dessert. Built Bars in general, like caramel brownie, amazing. Built Bars in general are better than dessert. The macros are unreal as well. They have 130 calories, 17 grams of protein, and only 4 grams of sugar. I would replace a regular brownie with Built's caramel brownie bar in a heartbeat because, you know, your normal brownies, unless they're like special ones, maybe like your mom's secret recipe or something, most of them don't actually have chocolate on top, but all Built Bars are covered in 100% real chocolate. Like for real, with Built, you don't have to sacrifice tasty for healthy. You can have both, including real chocolate draping every bar. So go to built.com and use promo code LOCKED15 and you can get 15% off your order. Again, use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. And Gavin, we are back to talk more mailbag questions. And we've got a couple questions, I should say, to end the show off here. First one, I pulled one from YouTube. We did open it up. Like, if you want to comment in the YouTube, you know, comments and ask us questions, we're always happy to answer them. So for those of you that are checking us out on YouTube, feel free to comment there. If you don't want to hit us up on Twitter or, you know, Twitter DMs or whatever, YouTube comments, totally fair game. And this comes from Jesse Owen from YouTube. What crazy shake the team up moves could realistically happen? Moving the veterans like Alec Burks, Evan Fournier, Nerlens Noel, Mitchell Robinson, Kemba Walker, and Taj Gibson. Ooh, a lot of names there, Gavin. Maybe is there like one or two you want to zero in on that you think could maybe happen during this offseason?
Yeah, I think the Evan Fournier one would be the surprising one at this point, given the way that he finished the season and at least the perceived, mostly by journalists, I haven't seen a lot of inside reporting on it, lack of value that he has around the NBA. I would be surprised if the Knicks got a positive return for him, but I would also be pretty upset if they attached an asset, even if it was a second round pick, to move off him. Well, not upset, because I guess there's a world where they're doing that to get someone like Quentin Grimes more time, to get someone like Cam Reddish more time. But I think we're underestimating the extent that the front office realizes what happened last year, specifically in regards to Tibbs running the team and just and favoring those vets over the young guys was unsustainable, to the point that I do think there'll be some move to head in a more definitive direction, whether that's trading a vet to allow the young guys to play, or, and this would hurt us, but to trade one of the young guys and say, hey, we're still all in on the idea of winning as many games as possible and being a sixth seed and losing in five games in the first round. I think you guys know where I stand on those two options, but I think we're going to be, well, not surprised, because I'm saying I think it's going to happen, but I think there will be some kind of big trade this offseason that the Knicks are involved with, not for a star, but just in terms of sending their roster one direction or the other.
Yeah, when I was thinking about what moves, because I was thinking about the nature of the question, right? Like crazy shake up the team moves. Like, I think Fournier might be my guy too. I will say about Fournier, the one thing that I feel like is maybe the case, and I feel like this is kind of the case with most guys on the Knicks, I don't know how much I buy like reporting on what the values of certain guys are around the league or whatever on the Knicks, because the Knicks notoriously at this point seem pretty locked up. Like they're pretty tight lipped about anything going on until, like, you know, we generally will see like a week before a trade happens, or sometimes even less, you know, like with the Rose trade and then with the Reddish deal, like we started seeing a little bit of rumblings, maybe like a week prior, maybe like 2 weeks tops with Reddish. There was like some light rumors out there. And then it happens. So I feel like the Knicks don't really start like letting stuff loose like that. And it might not even be them that's even doing it, but like they're kind of locked up. So like they're not really getting to put their own spin on this. And I think they kind of like it. But that means that like when guys are writing things about Knicks player trade values, they're getting it from other teams. So it's like, oh, Evan Fournier, he stinks so bad. They'd have to attach something to him to make me take him, and then all of a sudden that's in the ether, you know, that's out there, that's in a trade column or whatever, that's in a Hollinger piece or whoever happens to write it, you know. So I wonder if Fournier would actually have negative value. I feel like he wouldn't. I mean, I don't think that the player that we saw to close last year, after, you know, Tibbs finally like got off of his like you're just Reggie Bullock kick, I feel like the player that he was to close last year was not functionally much different than the guy that got a first rounder off Boston from, you know, Orlando. It was a first rounder, right? Or was it a second rounder?
It was two seconds,
whatever, you know, but that's positive value still. That's still value. You know, it's not like you don't have to attach a second to get off of him. So I don't really buy it that he would have negative value. I do feel like turning around and trading him a year after signing him is sort of like your big free agent acquisition would be a bit of a pivot. And I really don't know that I thought he was actually quite good to end the year. And he seemed pretty well adjusted to whatever role he was playing, you know, with the young guys out there too. He didn't seem unhappy about RJ Barrett becoming kind of like the alpha down the stretch and stuff like that. I mean, without subtweeting any further, basically he was not doing a lot of the same things that Julius Randle was doing in terms of seeming unhappy with the direction of the team. And, you know, he seemed legitimately just cool with whatever, just casually broke the Knicks single season 3-point record that it stood for like 25 years, 30 years. But yeah, so I think that would be surprising to me, but not like monumentally surprising if they decide to move, especially if like they need to do that to have Jalen Brunson happen. I sort of feel like that's my main answer for this whole question. As far as all those names that were listed, I think other than like Kemba, who I think they're just going to find some way out of, even if it comes down to a buyout, Mitch, they don't really have any control over. So maybe they work out a sign and trade. If he decides to sign somewhere, maybe he just walks for nothing. But like Nerlens is legitimately a negative asset. Burks is positive, but also is a positive player. Like I think he's just a good guy to keep around. I think the Knicks really like him. And Fournier, same deal. I kind of feel like he lived up to his contract down the stretch of the season. I feel like most of those guys, it's just going to come down to like, is Brunson coming? Do we need to move them to make room for Brunson? And if the answer is yes, then they'll be moved. If the answer is no, and Brunson's not coming, then they're not going to do it. And I think that's basically my overall thought on that list of names there.
Yeah, I think those are some good thoughts. Let's finish up the show on this one. A question from Jordan Bubb. He wants to know, with Nikola Jokic being a back-to-back MVP and the recent success of Rokas Jakubaitis in Europe, who are the top 10 international prospects in the 2022 draft? Should the Knicks pick another international prospect, and should the Knicks bring in an international prospect or draft and stash? Alex, I will leave that to you.
Yeah, we really had to rack our brains and look at some lists and stuff to cook up like 10 international prospects. Obviously, there's a couple guys that loosely fit into that category. Like Dyson Daniels is Australian, but played in the G League Ignite. Obviously, we've talked about him a lot. I really like him. It seems our YouTube comments are very split on Dyson Daniels, but you know, he's international by the letter of law. So too is Shaden Sharp and Ben McMathurin, who are both Canadian. Shout out to Canada. We're Team Canada, obviously, with RJ Barrett on the team. So also there's Leonard Miller, who I personally have not done much research on. Gavin, I don't think you have either, but I guess played in like the preps this year, took like a fifth prep year or whatever. And everything I keep seeing is that he's really intriguing, but it just seems like he's sort of a mystery and also like a huge risk to spend too high of a pick on. But yeah, he's like a wing sort of, and
didn't have a great combine either.
Yeah,
but was really good at the Nike Hoop Summit, arguably the best player there. So
yeah, so you know, take that for what you will. He's definitely an international prospect, though, worth keeping an eye on. Usman Jiang, who we've maybe briefly talked about. Maybe we should have Prez on to talk about him. To be honest, just live spitballing show ideas for before the draft. But Prez wrote a really long profile on him, so I felt like I got a little acquainted with him. He's sort of a rangy wing prospect, displays some shot making and shooting, displays some good defensive instincts, has a good frame, with a long wingspan, and he's very tall and plays kind of like a wing, but definitely needs to fill out. He's pretty thin, and depending on who you ask, he's, you know, Prez argued that he's more polished than people are giving him credit for. Other people argue that he's very raw. So definitely a guy maybe worth, like, if the Knicks look at him and they're like, oh, this is the dude, like, maybe worth trading back for and trying to net an extra asset or something, get off the 11th pick. Or if they feel like someone's going to take him too soon, like, just take him at 11. So it's a real guy that could be in play there if he works out well or something. There's Nikola Jovic from Mega BMAX, and hails from Serbia. That's the same team, I believe, where Jokic came from, unless I'm mistaken there. I think they changed their name. I thought they used to be called Megalex. I might just be talking out of my butt, though, and they might be too
tall. I thought you were saying for a second Jokic changed his name to Jovic and was playing for the team again. I was like,
yes, he decided to go back there.
Yeah.
And just dominate in his old stomping grounds for a little bit.
Yeah. I think should grab him. Yeah.
Let's grab this intriguing old looking prospect with he's really polished skills.
He's wearing like the fake glasses with the giant fake nose.
Yes. And the mustache.
Yeah.
He's got Rex Pack versions.
Yeah.
Strapped behind his head and like a big ass headband.
So just not feeling Denver anymore. Him on it.
Just wanted to go back home. So yeah, someone worth keeping an eye on. From what I understand, a pretty good shooter, but lacking in the defensive area, which is why he's not higher up on draft boards. But a probable 20-ish pick, you know, something like that. Like anywhere from, I don't know, the 18 to 25 range, something like that. So a guy worth keeping an eye on, particularly if the Knicks decide to trade down or try to get back into the first round. Ismail Kamagate, who plays for Paris Basketball. And he came recommended from Rafael Barlow the last time he was on, who specifically told a story about how in one of the like youth tournaments that Kamagate like locked up and soundly outplayed Victor Wembanyama, which is really impressive. Considering the caliber of prospect that Wembanyama is and the fact that Wembanyama like embarrasses full-grown adults all the time. So Kamagate, maybe a guy worth looking at that with that 42nd pick. Gene Montero, He's from Dominican Republic, played for the Overtime Elite. I admittedly don't know a ton about him. I know he's a guard. He's sort of point guard-ish, but played for the Overtime Elite where things have been so hard to, like, film and stuff, and evaluation has been hard from what I understand because they essentially played in their own bubble. So that's been a little weird. Hugo Bessin, a guard from the NBL. He's from France originally. I admittedly don't know much about him. Gavin, you seem to know a little bit about the next guy. Gabriel Procida, might have screwed that up, but he played for Bologna and is from Italy. So what have you heard about him?
I think this is not my most professional moment, but if I'm remembering his name correctly, I saw him hit one video of him shooting a jumper and it looked really good and really smooth. So the Knicks should definitely nab him in the second round is my
bingo.
Is my professional opinion on on Gabriel. But yeah, that's pretty much everyone, right?
Yeah. Also Khalifa Jopp. I've heard the name before. I admittedly have not looked much at most of these guys that we just mentioned to end are like second round guys. So like the realistic first round guys, if that's what you're looking for, are Usman Jang, Nikola Jovic, maybe Kamigate or Montero at the end of the first round. And then obviously, you know, like we said, like Sharp, Mathurin, Dyson Daniels, they're all technically international that they played stateside. And Leonard Miller maybe is being looked at that end of the first round range too, depending on what teams want to buy into. But yeah, that's sort of the scouting report there. And admittedly, we've been doing so much work on that Knicks range of around the 11th pick that I haven't really gotten to watch these guys a lot. So I can't really make like an educated opinion about them, but certainly names that I've heard, and some of them seem to have some pretty intriguing skills to me.
Yeah, I think that's as good of a note as any to end on. So we'll wrap up this edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast. As always, we appreciate you tuning in. Please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Head on to iTunes, throw us a 5-star review. Makes a real big difference. But for now, he's Alex. I'm Gavin. We'll talk to you soon on Locked On Knicks. Peace out.